Welcome back to Silk Flowers and
Paper Mache Hearts.
Today we will be speaking with Jim McClure, who is actually my boss at Yale.
I'm your host, Eric Hart.
And I'm your host, Ashley Flowers. Thanks for being with us today.
Yeah, of course. This is great.
So let's start off a little bit about how you kind of got into props. I know you have a background in ceramics and you actually worked at the circus.
Yeah. So my education is in fine art. So I have a bachelor's degree in ceramics and sculpture. And I wasn't really a theater kid growing up. So I didn't really do theater in high school. I was never really a performer. But I did a lot of weird artistic things growing up. I would pick up trash off the side of the road and paint it. And my grandmother kind of did weird stuff like that. So they were always encouraging me to kind of just play with things and do weird stuff. And I didn't really know that this was a whole job and that this was a thing that you could do.
Yeah.
And a friend of mine who was in community theater, her mom was doing props for one of the shows. And kind of showed up at her house one day with a whole bunch of stuff she got from a flea market. And I was like, wait, people gave you money, you went shopping, and like then you get to make stuff. I was like, oh, that's a job? Mm-hmm. Like, huh, that's kind of cool. I'd do that anyway. So then when I went to art school, I transferred. I stayed in community college for a couple of years because I didn't really know what I wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I transferred, I got really lucky because a couple of my roommates were involved in the theater. And I said, well, I'm kind of interested in this theater thing. I don't know anything about it, but, like, I like to make stuff. So they took me down to the theater department and said, here's the people. And they said, great, you could be the props master. Here, you can do it all.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of how I got sucked in a little bit. There wasn't really a, like, an education program devoted to props at the school that I went to. So I went to Alfred University, which is really good for ceramics.
Right.
They're basically a liberal arts school, and so they have a pretty small theater program, and their theater degree is you kind of do a little bit of everything. So you learn performing and directing and a little bit of design basics, but it doesn't really have like a focus. So since I was doing the fine arts, I kind of just was doing that in my free time. So I took a couple of those classes, but it was more just about working in the scene shop and kind of playing around and trying stuff on my own. And this was in like the wee days of the internet and YouTube. And, you know, it was hard to fall down YouTube holes because there weren't many videos to watch. Mm-hmm. So I read a lot of books and did a lot of research and just tried to figure out how to do stuff.
Now, after you graduated, you went and joined the circus and did some stuff there?
Yeah, so that came a little later. So I worked for a couple of summer stocks while I was in school.
Mm-hmm.
And then after being the props master for the Merry-Go-Round Playhouse for two summers up in the Finger Lakes up outside Syracuse, New York. It's in Auburn, New York. I met a bunch of people there who went on tours and kind of were like, we could get you a job with a tour. And I knew that that wouldn't mean that I could make anything, but I knew that it would make me a lot of money. And so I was like, okay, I'm pretty young. I'm not settled anywhere. Maybe I should try to do this thing and like bank up some money before I figure out where I'm going to land myself. So I applied to a bunch of those, but there weren't really a lot of openings at the time. And so I took a couple little fill-in jobs at that time and did a couple overhire run crews and stuff at a few theaters, and then a job with Ringling Brothers opened up on their props crew. And that was kind of crazy. So they called me and said, do you want to come? And I was already having like get another job. And so they said, well, as soon as you're done with that job, the day after, we'll put you on a plane and fly you down here. So they do a funny break in the, usually in December and a little bit of January where they, like, go back and if acts need to leave, they kind of switch them out and they re-rehearse.
Mm-hmm.
So that's when I came in. It was in, like, January 2007.
Mm-hmm.
Gosh, that's a long time ago. I went to – got to go to Miami in January, which was nice, being from the Northeast all the time. I did that, but it was mainly run crew. So we had to load things in and out of all the different arenas. It was pretty crazy because, and very different from what I hear from like typical, typical like Broadway show tours, mm-hmm. you know, where you're traveling on a bus and you're kind of with the same 10 people. I mean, we had the whole company of the circus that lived on the train. So we all had little tiny, like 4 foot by 7 foot rooms, so smaller than a piece of plywood, rooms on the train. And, but it was nice because I had my own space and I had a door that I could lock, and that was like important. I didn't have a bunk on a bus, mm-hmm. but the work was like not super fulfilling. It was mm-hmm. running shows. It was fixing broken things, which they got broken almost every show because surprisingly they like didn't have very good systems for storing things. You would think mm-hmm. that like a company that would be, that was touring would have like really great road boxes and like really great like little cubby systems that were like padded, but they were just wrapping stuff in packing blankets and like throwing it in a truck. Mm. And I was like, oh God. So I tried to kind of offer some solutions to fix things, but they didn't always really want them. But but it was tricky because it was like big arenas. It wasn't even like theaters. It was, you know, like concert, like giant venues. I mean, they do usually the tours. I mean, Ringling Brothers isn't around anymore. They like a couple years ago, they kind of stopped all the touring shows. Mm-hmm. But what they used to do is every show would do a 2-year circuit. And then they had 2 big shows running and they had sort of a 3rd small one. But the 2 big ones would kind of offset each other. And so they would do, like, every year the circus would come to Bridgeport, Connecticut or whatever. Mm-hmm. But it would be the red show, the blue show, the red show, the blue show. It would flip-flop because they would be at a different show. Mm-hmm. So the first year of the show, they call the rock star route. They do Las Vegas and Madison Square Garden and, like, awesome places. And then the second year, they call the rodeo route. And they do, like, Wheeling, West Virginia. Mm-hmm. And, like, Worcester, mm-hmm. Mass. You know, like, the slightly smaller places. So that was the year that I was on. Mm-hmm. So I did not, sadly, get to perform in Madison Square Garden. But I did get to see a lot of the East Coast, which was nice. And I did that for 6 months. So I was on there from January until June of that year. And May of that year is when I heard that this opening at Yale happened. So in my previous in-between school work, I had done a little bit of overhire at Yale. Mm-hmm. And one of my friends was a carpenter there who had gone to Alfred as well. And so I went and did like a week load in right before Christmas and then right after Christmas 1 year. Mm-hmm. And the scenery crew didn't have a lot of work the second week. And so they kind of were like, well, do you want to help the props crew? Like, that's kind of what you want to do anyway. So I just kind of helped schlep stuff for load in and kind of like held a lot of things while people were doing stuff. Mm-hmm. But like asked a ton of questions, asked, what are you doing? Hey, what's this? Hey, who are you? Really introduced myself to everybody. And at the end of that week, the smartest thing that I like ever did was left my resume there. Mm-hmm. So when this job came up 3 years later, they actually reached out to me and said, hey, we remember you. And, you know, if you want to apply for this job, you know, we, you know, if you're available.
That's awesome.
So that was kind of really awesome. And that's how, you know, what kind of pulled me out of the circus. And it kind of pulled me out like just at the right time because they were about to go into Texas for a month. And that was like, I don't know, that in July.
Oh, goodness. Mm.
And I was like, I don't know that I want to be in Texas for a month in July. Mm-hmm. So I got to leave right at the right time. But so the downer about the whole job was that it was running shows. And I am not a running show mm-hmm. person. Mm-hmm. It's funny because I really like tasks and jobs that have a lot of little repetitive motions, mm-hmm. but I like those little repetitive motions for about a week and a half. Mm-hmm. And then I'm like ready to move on to the next thing. So like doing the same thing every day, running that show sometimes 3 times a day was like not really where I wanted to be. So yeah, so it was just kind of tricky because it wasn't really making things. Mm-hmm. It was a lot of just running and maintaining. Mm-hmm. And then sadly not making much.
Right. Was there anything you picked up from the circus that you still use in your job?
So there was a couple of weird things. They painted things a lot with, they would just like spray paint things mm-hmm. to be able to quickly spray paint stuff. So I actually picked up some really good techniques on spray painting. And one of the members of the props crew had actually been like a graffiti artist. And so he kind of introduced me to like, hey, there's like different tips for these spray paint cans that you can get that like can do really fine points and really wide points and like make a flat line. And I was like, what? So that was pretty cool that I had no idea that was a really good thing, to pick up. And then they coated everything in glitter. So I learned how to like clear coat something and then take a palm full of glitter and just blow it on stuff and it would stick. And then we would take like basically like a printmaking roller, like a brayer, and we would flatten it all down and then do that like three times and then just clear coat the hell out of it. And just spray it with a really, really thick coat of clear coat. But it was kind of interesting because I always thought that like when you put coats of stuff over glitter that it would fall off. But it was actually really good to learn how to like encapsulate that, because that's one of the tricky things about glitter is it gets everywhere. Right. So to try to learn how to make that not happen and not fall off and like not snag people's costumes as they walk by. Yeah, those are probably like the big things. There was really interesting mechanics that I just didn't get to do a ton with. During maybe my last month that I was there, I did get trained on like driving one of the weird floats, which also was super weird. Like you would think that these things are like high tech and, you know, kind of like intuitive, like it would be made like a car, right? Like it would be made with a steering wheel and like a brake and a gas pedal, but it was made like weird RC cars are, where it has like two up and down toggles where like, you know, front to back is left and right. And then up and down on the other side is go and slow, you know, is fast and slow. It's like turtle and rabbit, right? So it was like you had to press up to turn right and down to turn left. And it was like kind of weird. And then like center was straight, you know, there was just like go. That was weird, but I don't really use that, sadly.
Right, yeah.
But that was definitely like a weirdly specialized skill that I picked up there. But yeah, it was a lot. And then I think what it did do for me is it made me think a lot about any time that we pack up a show to go somewhere else is how damaged things can get in transportation.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So anytime that we transfer a show somewhere, it's definitely something that's still in my mind of how to make sure that nothing shifts and breaks and that the show that you're sending somewhere is going to arrive in the condition that you sent it away in.
So I know at some point you started doing puppets and you've done a little bit of that. Can you talk about, well, one, how you got into that, what you like about it, and what the difference is of props, the normal props, I should say, versus puppets?
Yeah. Puppets are really fun and really great. And unfortunately, at Yale Rep specifically, we don't do a lot of shows with puppets. So what I was really interested in them and as kind of a craft. So I wound up doing a whole bunch of stuff in my free time, you know, free time with like big air quotes, spare time, I guess, time not at work. So there were, my first few years at Yale, I did a lot with the Yale Cabaret, which is a purely student run extra curricular, organization that does maybe between like 15 and 18 shows a semester. They almost do like one show a week. And so there was a lot going on there, but it was students kind of doing a little bit weirder things and trying to experiment a little bit. So there were a few good opportunities that came up through that I was able to make, that I was able to make puppets with. But I also just kind of tried to like, because I wasn't doing it at work, I was trying to find opportunities to let me do that. So there was a couple companies that would have like puppet competitions that I was like, well, maybe I'll enter that just to give myself a deadline that I'm going to try to make a thing. But I have to have it done by this time because I'm one of the masters of starting a thing and never finishing a thing.
Oh, no.
maybe that's a good topic later that we talk about the graveyard of unfinished. Cause yeah, there's a lot of that. So I found that if I had a deadline and a purpose to doing things, that I could try to do it. And I met a couple of people who were also doing some puppety things and just tried to jump on board with any opportunities that there were like that. So one of my friends was doing a puppet show that was sort of in partnership with the Mystic Aquarium. And I'm sort of a nut for all things nautical. Mm-hmm. So I was like, yes, please. I want to help in any way that I can. So I helped them make a couple of like seahorse puppets and a couple really big weird octopus legs and, did a bunch of weird stuff for that. And I mean, a lot of these things weren't paid things.
Right.
So, you know, as much as I kind of try now to encourage people to like, you know, do things and get paid for them.
Right.
There's always kind of things that come up that you're probably not going to get paid for, but the emotional fulfillment that you're going to get out of it is just as much worth getting paid. But to do that, you have to actually have the free time to do that. Right. So like you have to be getting paid in your normal job to have that free time. So I did some stuff with that. I did some stuff with like a local theater group called the Broken Umbrella Theater that some of our carpenters and things from Yale have started in New Haven, that they kind of have a local group that I jumped into a little bit and helped make them some stuff. So it was really about finding those opportunities when I didn't have that opportunity in my normal job that I could still kind of grow and learn those skills. I kind of just pick up any books that I can find at yard sales or flea markets or whatever that are weird skills. So like puppets in general are kind of pretty tricky for shows because to be able to like use them well, the performers really need them in rehearsal, like right away.
Yeah.
You know, because essentially like that's a character and that's a thing. And I mean, not to say that they can't do it, but it can be tricky to teach an actor who's never been a puppeteer to be a effective puppeteer. You know, like puppeteer is kind of a skill, same as like musician, right? Like you can kind of do it a little bit, but to do it well requires training and practice. Mm-hmm.
And do you do any performing with puppets?
Not really.
Okay.
No. I mean, I really like to watch it and I can get the nuance of it, but there was one small show that I was in with the Broken Umbrella Theater that I was like a side background character. It was like set in an old timey bar and like maybe I forget even what the time period of it was. And so a friend of mine who was also like had a puppeteer background, she had this beautiful old marionette that her grandfather had made. So she let me operate that. And then she played the saw. She like played a song on the saw. And we were like this weird vaudeville act in the background of this bar. So I didn't really have to like say anything or do much, but that was also a show that like I designed the set for and I worked on. So I was kind of like hanging around and they were like, we need something going on in the background. And I was like, all right, I guess I'll do that. But it's strenuous work, that puppeteering stuff, like got to really have some really good arm muscles and one really strong shoulder to be able to do this for a long time. It kind of requires a lot of like people watching. You like watching like those tiny little nuances and adding that stuff in is really what makes puppets like alive and really beautiful. Right. But there's something sort of interesting about them to me that like is a reflection of people. But like you can watch a puppet do something so menial, like sit in a chair, drink a glass of water, put it down. But like if it's not done well, it's like, ugh. Yeah. But if you forget that thing is like just a hunk of wood and like the people are doing it really well, it's like, you know, heart-wrenching to watch. Like, wow, that's so beautiful. I watched a TED Talk a bunch of years ago from the guys from Handspring Puppet Company that built all the Warhorse puppets. And oh my gosh, those are amazing and so beautiful. I went and saw Warhorse when it was still in Lincoln Center and they had like really stupid cheap rush tickets, you know, and they were like, they were really cheap because the seats were kind of crappy because they were like in the first aisle, you know, the first row way, way off to the side, like, you know, on the aisle. But what I had heard was that the horses walk down the aisle. And so I was like, oh, well, if that's where they're walking, I was like, I'll take that seat. I was like, I don't need to watch the whole play, but if I can see that horse up close when it walks by me, that's what I want. That's what I want this experience to be. So I was like, yeah, that was perfect. But those two guys did a TED Talk where they talk about the horse and if you can find it, it's really wonderful and beautiful. But they kind of talked about like how they developed this thing. But they say this really wonderful thing that like people are spending their whole lives trying not to die, right? Mm-hmm. We're trying to like fight death and stay alive. Mm-hmm. And puppets are already dead and they're fighting to be alive. Or right? Did I say that right? Maybe. I don't know. But yeah, so maybe I'll find the quote, maybe cut it out and just say there's a beautiful quote. Maybe I'll find it later. But they say something really, really beautiful that like brings tears mm-hmm. to your eyes of like, yeah, that's right. You know, like we're trying to breathe life into mm-hmm. this thing that doesn't mm-hmm. exist. And then, you know, like we've already got the life, so we're kind of taking it for granted, but we're trying to like put life into these really beautiful things. So, but it's those little tiny things of like it breathing mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. it moving that are the things that we take for granted that are so beautiful in a puppet. So I wish that I could do more of it. Mm-hmm. Maybe someday, maybe I'll get a little bit of that. Some summer when I'm not, you know, super busy, the big, there's a big puppet conference that happens at the Eugene O'Neill Theater in Connecticut mm-hmm. every year. It's like, you know, an international puppet conference.
Right.
So that's cool. That like maybe someday I'll actually get strong enough to like mm-hmm. apply and try to go.
Yeah. And the University of Connecticut has one of the few puppet MFA programs, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Correct. Yeah. So like I looked at it very, very briefly, but I didn't know if it was going to like want to satisfy me forever. Mm-hmm. Because that was one of the things that kind of didn't scare me, but kind of I was aware of even when I was in art school was like, I don't think I can be just a studio artist forever. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't think I can go and do the same thing. I'm not going to be happy just going and throwing pots every day or painting every day, which is why props is so great because mm-hmm. we're constantly doing something weird and different. Mm-hmm. So like there's definitely a scatterbrainness about me that props satisfies. So focusing in any one thing kind of terrified me,
right.
Which is why I was like, I don't even know. But like maybe if I did puppets, I would start to hate them. Mm-hmm. You know, so the fact that I get to do them like occasionally is what makes them really fun. But it's also hard to then become really great at that thing mm-hmm. because the people who are like masters have done it their whole mm-hmm. lives. Yeah. So, yeah.
Cool. Is there a particular style of puppet you like working with most?
I don't know. I mean, I really like things that have more mechanics. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the sort of engineering that goes into like the foam creation and all the shapes that go into like the Muppets are interesting mm-hmm. to me. But when either rod puppets or marionette puppets have just really bizarre, not bizarre, but have really complex movements
right.
that just function so, so well, mm-hmm. That's really where I think that the magic mm-hmm. is. I kind of am interested a lot in like automata. Some people say automata and some people say automata
right.
or automatons.
Yeah.
I don't know which is right. But I say automata and it's probably wrong, but that's fine. But I'm kind of interested a lot in that kind of just mechanical machines
right.
and the way that, you know, you don't need hydraulics and pneumatics and you know, crazy things to make stuff work with a string and some pulley and a rubber band. You can get a lot of, you know, kind of really interesting
right,
stuff
yeah.
to happen. So yeah, it's those ones that have some sort of mechanism mm-hmm. that really is what interests me creatively.
So I'd like to switch over a little bit and talk about Yale because you're the props master there.
Mm-hmm.
What is the relationship between the Yale Repertory Theater and the Yale School of Drama?
Sure. The Yale Rep, what the analogy that the school likes to use is that the Yale Rep is sort of like the teaching hospital to the School of Drama. So the School of Drama is a graduate level program that exists as a training institution. And then the Yale Rep Theater is giving all the designers that are learning at the school an opportunity to use those skills that they're, you know, developing in school mm-hmm. and also to work closely with professionals out in the field. So mm-hmm. often directors are either faculty or outside directors that are mm-hmm. brought in. And then the designers kind of rotate between the graduating students in each of the disciplines, between lighting design and costume design and sets. And sometimes outside set designers and lighting designers, as well as our faculty being sprinkled mm-hmm. in there as well. Mm-hmm. So sometimes if like sets and lights are students, then maybe costumes might be an outside designer. Mm-hmm. But it just is giving the students the opportunity to start kind of working with other professional people that they're going to work with in the rest of their career. And then the rest of the School of Drama productions are completely student run, directed, acted, designed, mm-hmm. everything. Mm-hmm. Typically for the Yale Rep shows, they're technically designed. The technical directors are students, are either second or third year TD students. And it kind of splits between whether the designers or students mm-hmm. or outside professionals. So the way that my department specifically functions is that the prop department works mainly and focuses on the Yale Rep mm-hmm. shows. So there's five main Yale Rep shows every year. And my crew, between me and there's two staff people, so Ashley and then our craftsman, David Schrader, are the staff for those productions. Then for the student shows, there are students assigned to be the props masters, and typically those are technical direction students that are assigned to those, and then I advise them through mm-hmm. that process. But unfortunately, just because of the size of our shop and the amount of time that we have, we don't get to help build those shows.
Right.
So those students wind up having work-study students that help them, or have to do a lot of that work mm-hmm. themselves. So those are tricky, you know, tricky positions.
Right.
For every one of the main Yale Rep shows, we are assigned one of the technical direction students to be the assistant props master. Mm-hmm. So that's, you know, as part of their training, they're kind of learning how I budget and how we divvy up things between the shops and how jobs get distributed and how to deal with rehearsal notes. And so they're with us every day in the shop after their classes to see that whole process all the way through from budgeting through tech and opening.
Mm-hmm.
And usually these students have no background in props.
Yeah. Yeah. Because we don't have a props focused track
right.
in our program. So the students that we're getting are, you know, technical direction students, and our technical direction program has a high focus also on production management. Mm-hmm. So we sort of get a split between students that want to be TDs and students that want to be production managers. Mm-hmm. So it's a high possibility that we get a student who kind of has a lot of production management background, but has like almost no craft skills and almost no, you know, knowledge of props. So even though they're graduate students, they may have kind of seen props being done.
Mm-hmm.
But so that's it's a little tricky, but also kind of one of the great things I think about, you know, working there is that mm-hmm. every show you get a new person who you're kind of starting over with, and you don't know what they know. So you get to teach them, you know, all the things that they don't know. But also because you're getting new people every year, you can start to pick up things that are happening out in the rest of the industry. So whether it's new tools that are coming on the market and being mm-hmm. used, or whether it's new procedures or just like the designers that people have been working with, you kind of you don't get stuck in your insular little corner of the community. Mm-hmm. You really start to get that the new ideas being brought in from the students. So
mm-hmm.
that's kind of great. And it's nice that they're graduate students and they want to be there, you know, and they're a little more focused. There's a really fun energy from undergrad students, though,
right.
that is also kind of infectious and that kind of thing. So I had the opportunity to go to one of the ACTF festivals this past mm-hmm. year and be a respondent for them.
Mm-hmm.
And that was like invigorating to be around students that aren't like jaded yet,
right.
that actually still really like theater. And they're also doing shows that, you know, I mean, the Yale Rep is a pretty big, prestigious theater. Mm-hmm. But there's something a little bit freeing about doing a show that's less people are going to see, and
mm-hmm.
maybe it's not perfect, mm-hmm. you know, but it's getting an idea out there and it's getting people to practice their skills
mm-hmm.
that, you know, there's a little less, I don't want to say there's less pressure, but like a little less pressure, right?
A different kind of pressure.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Exactly. That, you know, you still want to make the best show that you can.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes it's about, you know, people trying a thing and, you know, maybe they haven't done it before and that's okay. You know, the fun, but also then like year after year, show after show, you do wind up saying the same things over and over. Mm-hmm. So you have to be okay with that, that, you know, that you just have to remember, oh, that's right, the last student knew that and this student doesn't know that. So I kind of have a mental list of like all the things that I have to remember to say. Mm-hmm. when they come in the shop, you know, like, here's where the tools are, here's who to talk to, here's what we do. You know, and then mm-hmm. also like, don't forget to do this thing, because you can't rely just on somebody knowing, oh, they're supposed to do that. You know, yeah. You have to remember that they're not instinctively going to do that thing that you've been trained to do for your career.
Mm-hmm.
So, which, you know, sometimes when you forget that, can be like, oh, why is that? Why are they not doing that? Like, oh, right, because I never told them mm-hmm. they have to do that. So
cool. And I remember you had brought up previously an interest in starting a props MFA program in Yale.
Yeah, it would be really exciting. Mm-hmm. It's literally been like that's been the conversation.
Right.
Like, what if we were maybe able to have an MFA program? Mm-hmm. So it hasn't gotten much further than sort of just being a conversation in a meeting with like four other
right,
people.
Yeah.
Like, what mm-hmm. if, you know? It would be really interesting. And there's just not a lot of places where people can get that kind of training, mm-hmm. and people mm-hmm. can get that kind of education, you know? So it would be nice to be one of those places. I mean, the tricky thing is that we don't have a lot of space,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, we don't even have enough space to help with our student shows.
Yeah.
So, you know, if we were to try to add, you know, even one or two students per year that were always in our shop and you know, trying to find the opportunities for them to really learn, we kind of have to take a little bit of a back step on like how we're doing work now,
mm-hmm.
To make sure that we could give those students a really good mm-hmm. education. But it also, you know, there's plenty of schools out there that are only having one or two people
yeah.
in their program per year. So I think the thing I'm trying to remember is it's not like you have to start a program and expect that you're going to get 10 students every year,
right.
you know? That there's schools that are succeeding.
So Yale also does a technical internship. Can you talk about specifically the props internship? Something I did a couple of years ago.
Yeah, sure. And I mean, you might, I mean,
I'll chime in too.
Yeah, I mean, you might be able to give a good synopsis of it too. So most of our technical shops have sort of a, I think we call it like the technical internship certificate or some
yeah.
kind of business. But it's a little different than other internships out mm-hmm. there because it's still part of the School of Drama. So for half of the time that you're there, you actually get to take classes at the graduate level with mm-hmm. the rest of the graduate students.
But and only half of them. So three a semester and you can audit a fourth.
Yeah. Yeah. So where a normal student's typical semester course load is either, you know, six classes with maybe overloading to seven, they take three mm-hmm. classes. And then, so that would be, you know, three a semester, maybe audit a fourth. So over the year that you're there, you get to take somewhere between six and eight graduate level classes at the School of Drama.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so that takes about 20 hours out of your week between all of those classes. And then, so the other 20 hours of your week go into the shop. So the way that our class schedule is sort of set up is that typically classes are in the mornings until about 2 in the afternoon, and then mm-hmm. at 2, everyone shifts over to their production work. So then in the afternoons, we get the students in the shop from about 2 to 6 every day. And that's the same also for our technical direction students that are assigned to the shows as mm-hmm. well. So yeah, so it's a little different than other internships where you're purely in the shop.
Yeah.
But I think it's a really interesting bridge for people to jump into out of undergrad, where maybe they want to go to grad school, but they're not sure yet. Or maybe they just want to take a few more classes, but don't want to commit to 3 years of grad school.
Yeah.
You know, so I kind of like to say that it's like grad school mm-hmm. light.
Yeah.
That you're getting, you know, you're getting the chance to like take graduate level classes, but it's only a 1 year commitment. Mm-hmm. The downer of it is that because you are in school and because you're taking those classes, there is still like a tuition
mm-hmm.
that's associated with that, but it's only half the typical tuition yeah. because of, you know, because it's only three classes. But the financial aid program is really, really generous and
mm-hmm.
pretty good and very need need-based, mm-hmm. And most people come out with almost no debt between getting their financial aid package and then work study opportunities that they can pick up while they're there.
Yeah.
So, I mean, did you come out, like, horribly in debt?
Yeah, I was fine. Yeah, I came out with no debt or anything, didn't have to take out loans.
Yeah. So it's a pretty interesting program. We can take up to 2 interns every year, so... And we don't get a lot of applications. So anybody hearing this out in the world, please, please apply. I think that a lot of people sort of self-select themselves and think, oh, I'm not good enough to get into Yale or I'm not good enough. The point of this internship and this program is like, yeah, you're not good enough. Come and learn something.
Right.
You know, like we've taken people who've barely touched props before and sort of are like, I don't even know if I want to do this. And we've taken people that have been out working for a few years and come back and wanted to learn some things. So we have a wide range of people that are applying, but it's a pretty great opportunity. And there's a huge range of skills to learn from people in our shop. I mean, our craftsman has been in our shop for close to 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
I've been there for 12. Ashley's been in there, this is her second year.
Yeah, yeah.
But what's interesting, too, is that we all have really diverse backgrounds. I didn't really freelance much. You did. Our craftsman has a huge wealth of knowledge about furniture repair and that kind of stuff. I'm really interested in mold making and have an art background. So we have a really diverse group of people that the interns can learn from that I think that they benefit from a lot, too. So
yeah, I think... what makes this internship very different to other prop internships that I have done is non-Yale internships. I was doing very small projects. I was assisting other artisans, wasn't really doing a big project. And when I got to Yale, you know, you're doing a little bit, but then you're suddenly thrown to the wolves. It felt like you're like, oh, let's do this large project now. And we're going to, you know, take you through it and we're going to hold your hand, but you're going to do it. And the next one, we're not going to hold your hand.
I don't think we're throwing you to the wolves. I think we're throwing you to the wolves with some tools and a whole bunch of food.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, totally.
So that you've got all the things to succeed.
Yeah.
But like, there's the chance that wolf could come in and get you if you don't work hard.
Yeah. But it's good. It was a great experience. And I learned a ridiculous amount of knowledge and felt extremely prepared to go out into the world where before I was like, I've used this saw once before.
Yeah. My big thing about it is that, you know, I know that it's an education opportunity and I want students to come out of that with more information that they came in. So it's definitely not hey, watch me do this and then go get me coffee and you're going to clean up stock every day type of thing. It's very, I want it to be really hands-on because I want those students to come out with a whole bunch of stuff from their portfolio that they didn't have before and that they can, you know, go get a job. You know, I mean, you came out of there and went and jumped into New York and then, you know, we're prepared enough to come back. One of our interns this year just got a job at Milwaukee Rep as one of their artisans. So it's, you know, it's good training program.
Yeah. Well, guys, I think that's going to be the end of this episode. Thank you for listening to Silk Flowers and
Paper Mache Hearts. And thank you to our guest, Jen McClure.
Thank you so much for having me.
If you have any questions or want to give us a topic that you guys want to hear, you can email us at propspodcast@gmail.com. We also have a Twitter account you can check out at Silk Mache.
Find us on iTunes and Google Play. Rate us, review us.
All right, we're going to finish up this conversation next week, so tune in then. Thank you.